Hi, you're listening to The Wing Women, brought to you by journalists and best mates, Charlie Gowans Eglinton, that's me, and Frankie Gradden, that's her. Frankie, how are you?
I'm well, thanks, Charles. How are you?
I'm all right. We're back to Zoom.
Oh, I know. Sorry, guys. Apologies for the slightly ropey audio. But we're back to Zoom. Ben was in contact with someone who has confirmed COVID over the weekend. So you can imagine the atmosphere in my house this week. Because it's my birthday on Friday, and at the moment, all my birthday plans have had to be cancelled. Hopefully, we'll get our PCR test results back in time. Flipping fingers crossed, mate.
Flipping fingers crossed. So you haven't been to any cheese and wine nights?
No cheese and wine nights. Thing is, I feel bad for Ben, because he is in full hermit mode. Whenever he has to work from home, he really doesn't leave the house. He's not very good at just going out for a walk to stretch his legs. So he's been existing pretty much in two rooms for the last 4 months. He goes out twice last week for his annual Christmas traditions that they do. He went out for those, and then his best mate has caught COVID. So he was like, God damn it, the two times I went out in all of these months and I've potentially got something. But it hasn't lessened my anger with him and his friend, let's be honest.
Yeah, fair.
I know we shouldn't get angry at people, but it's nearly Christmas. It's my birthday. I had some plans. We had a dinner booked on Thursday. We were going to Noble Rot and I've been trying to get into that place for flipping ages. And our pregnant friend was even going to just come and do a 9 p.m. table with us, which is far too late when you're pregnant, but she was going to do it out of love anyway, and we've had to cancel it.
It is tricky, that, isn't it? Because obviously we shouldn't blame people for catching it, but then it's hard because we're all doing risk assessments constantly. So for Ben, if he has barely gone out and then he goes and sees his friend who has been licking door handles potentially, it's tricky, isn't it, to be able to just say, oh well, it's happened and it can happen anywhere.
People have spoken about how it's caused rifts in friendships and in families. People are treating it so differently, and you have your own way of dealing with things and you have a way that you think others should deal with them, but essentially you can't impose what you believe on other people. People will do what they want to do, and it's hard because it can then impact your life and your plans, and it's really difficult to be accepting all the time of other people's choices. But what other option do we have? It's a really hard one. I mean, I can't tell Ben not to go to his two Christmas events of the year for fear that he might catch something, because he might have not. You know, that's really difficult. And he's tested negative the last 3 days, so fingers crossed he doesn't. And I think getting so close to Christmas, that's where it gets particularly anxiety inducing, just the thought of having another Christmas at home, not being able to go out, ugh, would just be my worst.
And the headline today, a million to be isolating at Christmas.
Mm. Oof. I mean, no one wants that, do they?
We've had our boosters though.
Yes.
Raise the roof.
Raise the roof. We both went on Monday. Charles did a wondrous phone call on Saturday night before the announcement went out. And she said, oh my God, my sister's just by chance tried putting in her NHS number and she's managed to get an appointment and I've just done it. So then I did it immediately and we both got booked in for Monday. Although your appointment ordeal was slightly more extravagant than mine.
Basically, I had to move mine and I couldn't move mine and the website was crashing and it wouldn't work. And so then I was like, I'll just go to a walk-in. And the first walk-in I went to was quite jolly. It was near us. It was near the university on Holloway Road. So it was all very young people because it's over 18s. And there was a woman with a tin of Quality Street, which was very nice.
Festive.
I know. I didn't take one because COVID. I don't know that that's sanitary. The thought was there. Everyone else took one. But
yeah.
The fuck, guys. But then they walked on the queue and said there were only three people inside who were actually trained to do vaccinations. So they couldn't guarantee that they would actually get to us and they had to close at 4 because they weren't allowed to be in the building past 4 and blah, blah, blah. So then I rented a Zipcar Flex, drove across London to Guy's Hospital, which I knew was open late and had proper big tents and stuff, and queued for like 3.5/4 hours in the drizzle. Quite jolly. But you know what's sad? Because people had talked about those walk-in queues last time and talked about how jolly they were and how social they were and how there were fit people in them. And I even saw on Instagram yesterday, somebody put up a picture of their vaccination card and said, oh my God, the queue in South London was a 30-something mixer. You could cut the sexual tension with a knife. I can't remember who it was. Devastated. There was none of that in my ends.
Oh, I'm so sorry. What a fantastic meeting story.
I know. Because I do think the masks could make for great frisson.
Yeah.
Because you've got a lot of eye contact, but also a little bit of mystery. You know, it's like being a mask full.
Well, and we were talking about this the other day. You think that you're better looking with a mask on.
I am, because I get checked out more. It's scientific.
I disagree, because I think the lower half of your face is equally as attractive as the upper half of your face.
I can tell, because physical calibre of man who doesn't normally check me out checks me out when I'm wearing a mask, because I think my age shows on the bottom half of my face. And I'm a little bit jowly. I've got quite some heavy... What are those lines called?
I was about to ask you, what are those lines called? We're tracing the lines between nostril and corner of mouth.
Mm.
They're the ones that make you look like a hangdog.
I'm going to look it up. I've got a feeling it's a word like labia or something.
Not your labia.
No, here we go. Nasolabial folds. I took from that the relevant part, which was labia. And actually, maybe I am starting to look a little bit labial, just around the mouth here.
Okay, but you didn't meet the man of your dreams.
I did not.
Your eyes did not lock over Pfizer top-up jabs.
No, I'm very sad.
I'm so sorry. Maybe that could be, I'm desperate for Richard Curtis to do another film. I mean, come on, Richard Curtis. The world has been through a really shite time of it. And what we need now is a highly implausible but heartwarming romantic comedy.
I love that.
And maybe the opening scene could be the two protagonists mm-hmm. meeting in a jab queue.
Mm. I did enjoy, when I got into the waiting room of mine, there was a man sat at the desk, and behind him was a big screen with the names on of the waiting list. And then as you got called in, your name flashed up. And there was a man at the desk, and he was so Love Actually, fun character who's at the airport ticket office or something. And as each person's name was flashing up, he would try and say it. But there were lots of unusual names, so he was struggling to say each one. So with mine, he looked at me because he could obviously tell that I was next just from the sudden tension in my body. And so he looked at me and went, "Are you next?" And I said, "Yes, I am." And he said, "Great. How do you say that? Gowans?" And I said, "Gowans." And he went, "Fantastic." And he was making mental notes of how to say each person's name. And one man had just read his name on the screen and went to walk in without this guy reading out his name. Rude. It's obviously the highlight of his day. And he actually stopped him before he went in and was just like, "How do you say your name?"
Oh, bless him.
It was so lovely and so like a little Love Actually sketch. I really enjoyed it. Because suddenly everyone was having a nice time together.
Yay for that man.
Side note, what do you want for your birthday? Just asking for the purposes of the podcast, not because I still haven't bought you a present.
Only 2 days to go. Okay, this is going to make me sound like a spoilt brat. But this year, I've just sort of had it a bit with presents. I don't know why it's got on top of me so much. Everyone keeps asking me what I want for my birthday, what do I want for Christmas, what does Alfie want for Christmas? And I'm just like, ugh. Not only have I got to buy everyone else's presents, I now need to think about what I want. Oh! I'm aware that makes me sound like an absolute dick. But you know, you're just like, I don't know. Someone just come up with an idea for me. I'm trying to think what to get Granny, what to get Mum from me, what to get Mum from Alfie. This is an annoying thing. This is my own fault. I started it last year. I sent my family members Christmas cards and presents from Alfie.
What the fuck were you thinking?
Obviously, I was just excited about having a new baby. I've made a rod for my own back.
He was about 6 weeks old at the time as well. What were you doing in a room wrapping presents from Alfie?
Well, actually, we didn't wrap. It's because we were locked down, so we didn't see any friends or family. So I did the very festive thing of just ordering packages unwrapped to other people's houses.
Fine.
And Mum was like, "There's a delivery from John Lewis." I was like, "Yeah, that's your Christmas present. You're welcome." Just try not to look at the receipt. Anyway, Oh my God, we made baubles with footprints. Did we give one to you?
No, where's my footprint bauble?
They're so awful. I have one. You can have it.
I'm assuming you mean Alfie's footprint.
Yeah, sorry, the baby's footprint. I sent one to Mum and Dad in time for Christmas, and then eventually when we got to see them, they had it out, and I was like, oh, you've got Alfie's footprint bauble out. And Mum was like, is that what it is? And I was like, what did you think it was? I just gone bleh with a paintbrush on a bauble. Anyway, so I'm a bit over present buying, but I will think of something for my birthday. I don't know, what do I want? I want nothing and everything. Do you know what I mean? I hate everything that I have,
yeah,
but I just don't know what I want.
Yeah. I sort of need someone to just come in and fix my life. So my family members keep going, what do you want for Christmas? And it's like, well, a really expensive new record setup, but also I need like some pictures framed. So could you come to my house, take the pictures to the framers, take me to the framers, help me make the decision, and then help me hang them on the wall? I don't even want you to pay for it. I just need somebody to facilitate the decision making. And I also need some foam cut for some cushions for those armchairs that I bought without cushions that still don't have cushions 6 months later. Can somebody just make me go to the foam shop? Or can somebody incentivize this for me? That's what I need for Christmas. Some reason to do tasks. Help me.
Do you think there's an annual subscription to TaskRabbit? That would be helpful. I've got so many things around the house. We've been living with a broken loo seat for the last 6 weeks. It's like taking your life in your hands every time you sit on the loo.
You've got two loos though, because you're posh.
Yeah. So. I know, but that would be nice. Maybe you could get me a toilet seat.
I can.
Thanks, babe.
Glamorous life, eh? Side note, before we move on, did you get an advent calendar in the end?
No.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry.
No advent calendar. But Ben got his comeuppance. Call it Christmas karma, Chaz. So Ben started a new job and he's pretty much been working from home, as mentioned. And he has these leadership team meetings over Zoom. And they're very hot on video. And to get the Christmas spirit going, there was a request for yesterday's leadership team meeting for everyone to wear their Christmas jumpers. Ben loves a Christmas jumper. He had one ready. He even wore some Christmas socks. And I was in the other room and he started the video call meeting. And then I just heard him go, where's everyone else's Christmas jumpers? Honestly, he was the only one that had turned up in one. Oh no, it broke my heart, but also made me howl. Oh, and it's just so funny because he's one of maybe two guys in the office and he's quite a senior role. And I just thought that's just hilarious.
But also, he's only met them all in person once or twice.
It's a proper Christmas jumper as well. It's not like a festive fair aisle that could pass as just a Christmassy knit. It has flashing lights. It has candy canes.
Had he turned it on?
He turned it on. It was full.
Oh my God, he was a light.
No, and he Fantastic. Had the elf socks on. Not that anyone hopefully could see them. I don't know, maybe he gave them a flash.
God, that's commitment. He was wearing trousers though, right?
I hope so.
Weird, just a Christmas jumper and then elf socks.
Oh, right. Come on then, let's just do it.
Oh, let's get to it.
Have you caught up on And Just Like That?
I bloody well have. There's a new episode out today though, so we have only seen episodes 1 and 2.
Yeah, I'm so pleased my Now TV logins worked for you. I bought Now TV especially for And Just Like That.
I was thrilled. So, I think we both took notes, no? Because we watched this separately.
Yeah.
I've actually got a full notebook here, I don't know if you can hear that. Couple of pages.
Whoa.
Of notes. You start.
Okay, so my first note was glasses at brunch. I understand they've aged and we need to mark the moment. Is it 20 years has gone by? I get that. I'm loving Miranda's grey hair. Carrie actually seems to have not changed in the slightest. Charlotte's potentially had too much Botox. I'm sorry, that's a bitch thing to say, but I think Kirsten Davis is just so beautiful and I don't know why she touched her face, but that's the world we live in. Anyway, I just thought it was overkill that they all got out their ginormous saucer nana glasses to read the menu at brunch. That annoyed me a little bit.
Yeah, because let's be honest, we'll go blind much sooner than that. I have not been able to see more than the foot in front of me for about 15 years. I'm wearing glasses as we speak. I'm normally wearing contact lenses. It's very unusual, I think, for a whole group of friends to make it through and they've all got perfect vision and suddenly they're all like, oh my God, I've hit 50.
Does that say Eggs Benedict?
I'm going to do the things that annoyed me.
Yeah.
Okay, the other things that annoyed me, Miranda and Carrie wanted to share a croque madame for brunch.
Yeah.
It's a sandwich. Have your own. I mean, come on. That annoyed me because I was like, come on, are we still doing that thing with food? Stop it.
And then that woman came over and was like, oh my God, who ordered fries? You guys are like hilarious kooky cats for ordering fries and then ate their cold fries.
So gross.
As if you would ever do that when you first meet someone.
Yeah, I didn't like that sort of framing of naughty food. I thought that was a very 90s thing. We grew up in the age of the fad diets and everyone just eating loads of cottage cheese and Ryvita. And there was definitely this narrative around naughty food. And it annoyed me that that had still been written in. Because I was like, ugh, we've moved on from that, surely. And also, if I'm not chowing down croque madames in my 50s without a care in the world, then I think I've done something wrong. That irritated me. What else? Oh my God, I had to leave the room when Carrie asked Big to masturbate for her.
I hated it so much. Chris Noth is his name. What had he done to the writers for them to do this in this episode? Because what he had in this episode was,
spoiler alert,
masturbation scene, looking sweaty and a bit unfit, pushing it on an exercise bike, death. But what did he do to them? That was the most mortifying character arc.
God.
Not that there's any shame in masturbating, but as my friend Sophie put it, how was that their final sex scene? How, after all those series, after her meeting Mr. Big in like 98, how did they end it with, you just masturbate as if I'm not in the room? What?
He's not a sexual person for me. I get it in the context of Carrie and Big, but I had to leave the room. I found it too much.
Oh, also, I didn't even mention some of the most awful writing for his character. Him singing Todd Rundgren. Who did that to him? When they put on the record of the day and Big started singing Todd Rundgren, I was reminded of one of the most painful moments of film history, which is Jack Black in The Holiday singing, he's a scroodle do. I hate it so much. And the two of them behind the kitchen counter.
You hate that bit.
I don't know if that was worse for me than when he died, honestly.
Although I have to say, that scene when Carrie's just come in and they've got this incredible apartment and he's in the kitchen, she's bought some sockeye salmon and they're making dinner. He's got some wine, they're around the island, they're talking about going to the Hamptons. And I did think, oh my God, if there was ever an advert for not having kids, and then this is what your amazing life would look like, this is it. And it did momentarily make me regret procreating.
However, it was not believable. She went to put the record on. Do you see how she held it?
I didn't notice it.
You're supposed to hold them by the edges because a record player reads the grooves. She literally held it, I don't know how to describe it, just her full hand on the face of the record, flat, and was like waving it around. She's never seen a record before, I'm assuming, Sarah Jessica Parker. So we're supposed to believe that she's like, oh, modernity. Aha! I don't know how any of this works. They're all old school, and yet she's never seen a record before. Okay, cool. Believable. Thank you. I'm sad we didn't get to see their Hamptons house.
Oh, can you imagine how nice it would be? Also, Carrie's Hampton wardrobe, I think I'll probably be here for.
But maybe that's coming.
Yeah, maybe she'll go as a little tribute trip. Scatter his ashes.
She'll be in mourning.
Oh, she's going to have to wear black.
After that Jackie O funeral look,
phenoms,
as Stanford called it, perhaps she'll do Jackie O Hamptons as well and do that headscarf, big sunglasses, white capri pants things.
That would be nice.
That would be nice. But also on that scene with the record player, in their amazing flat, they had Manhattan skyline wallpaper. Did you notice this? There was a Chrysler building.
I didn't, but now that you've mentioned it, yes. Awful.
What the fuck? Who did the interiors? Carol Smiley. I didn't know what to do with that, honestly. As if they would have skyline wallpaper.
But then also, this is the series that put forward the idea of a corsage for 20 odd years.
That is true.
We have that to thank for Gok Wan constantly wanting to put corsages on middle-aged women. Poor women.
Poor women. I mean, we've been through the ringer, haven't we?
My God, the last thing we need is a waist belt and a corsage. Stop it. Talking about fashion, though, I did think it was done very nicely. And it reminded me, Carrie has always been such a champion of a visible bra strap, which I do actually have an awful lot of time for.
Okay.
I'm always amazed how much she wears a bra, because especially in her younger days when the series was in its first flushes, she's got such a banging bod. Like, I imagine her tits sort of keep themselves up. But each of their own. If you feel more comfortable wearing a bra, you wear a bra.
Frankie hates wearing a bra, so she can't imagine wanting to wear a bra.
I absolutely hate wearing a bra, and that's the absolute bastard about breastfeeding. It's like the tits that have been left are down to my kneecaps, honestly. So now I have to wear a bra and I'm annoyed. Anyway, we got private healthcare and I'm wondering if a boob job is a legitimate thing to get. Probably not.
Just a little lift or a full 90s boob. You could do it.
If you're going to do it, might as well get some rock solid tits, eh? But I think in general, fashion is very unkind to women who want to wear underwear. And we've always been a bit like, oh no, someone can see like a visible panty line and a visible bra strap. And not that I like walking around with my pants on show, but I do think let's normalise a visible bra strap. And I think Carrie is a real champion of that. So thank you very much.
Okay, what other fashion highlight? I enjoyed Charlotte as Monica Bellucci at a funeral.
Yes. Oh my God, she looked great.
Phenomenal. She looked fantastic. Also, Stanford.
Yes.
That blue suit that he wears to the piano recital, with a shirt that looked like it had kind of tie-dyed bits. It was very confusing to me, but I enjoyed it so much.
Yeah.
A high point.
I thought that was fantastic. I loved that Charlotte bought the girls Oscar de la Renta frocks for the piano recital. What fantastic life they lead. Yeah, thought that was amazing. Actually, in the awful masturbation scene, I thought Carrie's at-home pyjama wear was quite nice. It was a long, robey, full dress. It didn't have an opening. I liked the long layers of silky satininess. I thought she was really selling a dream to me there.
Great. Until she asked her husband to masturbate for her.
Awful. I had to absolutely loll my face off at the piece that our friend Sam sent us. I feel like this conversation has been circulating. Ask a Cardiologist, Should Carrie Have Called 911? By Rachel Handler, and it's on Vulture. And it is absolutely hysterical because, I mean, if you haven't seen it, what are you doing listening to this? But Big is having a heart attack for quite a long time before Carrie walks in. He's still conscious. He looks at her. He even tries to, like, say something. She just stares at him for an endless amount of time and then runs over to him and hugs him and doesn't call 911.
Baffling.
Absolutely baffling. So this hilarious piece, the writer actually knows a cardiologist, so has spoken to him. He's called Daniel Luger, and he's a cardiologist at Chicago's Rush University Medical Center. And he concludes that had she called 911 and given him CPR, he would still be alive today. Thanks to her overdramaticisms, not sure if that's a word, but thanks to that, she killed Big.
Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone was happy with how she handled that. Also, the fact that this has been trending quite a lot, that Lily first hid Carrie's phone at the wedding. So when Big was trying to call her when he was getting cold feet, she couldn't find her phone because Lily had put it in her little purse that Charlotte had got her in the first film. And then Lily has her piano recital. And so instead of being in the Hamptons with Big, Carrie's watching Lily play piano. Charlotte's blaming herself, but is it in fact Lily?
Potentially. She's very good at the piano, though.
Fantastic at the piano. Did you also enjoy the Peloton ad in which Big has run away with his personal trainer?
Allegra.
Allegra, who we saw on the video. They're just in front of the fire and there's some innuendos about having a workout, and then it sort of zooms out and there's bikes visible. And then Ryan Reynolds does a voiceover that says that exercise is actually very good for you.
Oh my God, I love that.
And then whispers at the end, he's alive.
I actually think that's genius from Peloton, because I was reading that they knew that a bike had been bought for the series, but they didn't know the context of it. So can you imagine being the CEO of Peloton, tuning in to watch, and just like that, the biggest TV moment arguably of the year, and your product that's been having a little bit of a hard time since lockdown lifted has got a starring role in it, only for it to be the murder weapon for one of the most beloved characters You would be absolutely beside yourself.
Really bad day at the office.
But actually, the piece that I mentioned earlier, should Carrie have called 911, the cardiologist does say that actually Big doing his Peloton cycles will have helped extend his life, because he is partial to a bit of an extravagant lifestyle, the cigars, the steaks, lots of wine. You know, he doesn't look super healthy, not to be fat shaming. He looks like he's a man that enjoys the good things in life.
That's how they style him, as a man who enjoys a bit of excess.
Exactly. That's his whole lifestyle. That's his shtick. And he did have some heart problems in Sex and the City, didn't he?
Exactly.
So actually, the Peloton cycles has probably helped him out.
Fabulous.
Did the flowers at the funeral make you cry?
No, but I did cry in the episode. But can we talk about Samantha and her absence?
I feel it and I do miss her. I thought it was peculiar at the very beginning when that random woman that has a grudge against Carrie, and no one's entirely sure who she is or why she has a grudge, said, "Where's Samantha?" And Charlotte just goes, "She's not with us anymore." And there was sort of a repetition of this phrase, and then clarification that she'd moved to London for a job because Carrie fired her as her book publicist.
I think this is so savage. Arguably worse than killing Samantha, they've decided to make her this bad friend. How dare they? So instead of killing her, Carrie sacked her, and then she's not able to cope with being sacked. And there's a, I've written this down, quote from Carrie, "Thought I was more to her than an ATM. I'm sorry, no. Samantha would never, she would never see Carrie as a paycheck. Unacceptable." Also, the line when she's moved to London and someone says, "Sexy sirens in their 60s are still viable over there." Sorry, who wrote that? And who is shaming Samantha in this way? No, 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 no.
It's not okay. I did think that was implausible. I mean, fine that she moved to London. London's a great city. But I thought the reason as for why she had was unkind and unfair. Actually, in Sex and City, the original series, Samantha was normally the one that pulled through. When it came down to it, she was always the one that was there for you.
Samantha was the least selfish one.
Yeah.
Even when she broke up with Smith because she wanted to be by herself, she was very honest about it. She was always very open, I thought. It's not her. It's not believable writing. Obviously, everyone knew why she wasn't going to be in the series, so they couldn't make it particularly believable, because we would have all just been sat there being like, "Ugh, you just don't like each other." But I just thought that was quite catty.
I thought it was catty. But the scene where the flowers turn up on Big's coffin and they're from Samantha, it got me.
Are you welling up now?
There were tears running down my face.
They were beautiful flowers.
Because I thought that is what Samantha would do. She's classy.
Exactly. She's classy.
She's bigger than whatever petty tittle-tattle riff-raff has gone on. And she will send some fucking amazing flowers.
Hard agree.
Boom. What else is on your list?
The wokeness. Because of the storyline, I then stopped noticing the wokeness quite so much. But, I mean, Miranda doing this whole trying to be anti-racist, but keeps, whoopsie, putting her foot in it and, like, whoopsie, being a white saviour and, whoopsie, saying something racist, oof, was a lot. And then it made me think, is that how I'm supposed to feel as a woman watching this? Am I one of millions of white women watching this going, "Oh my God, yes, isn't it so hard for us?"
Mm.
That made me wonder about the demographic of the show, if they think that everyone watching it needs this peculiar reality check where it's kind of like, "Well, we just can't win, can we, guys? Because when we try to help, people call us white saviours." It was off.
Yeah, and it didn't really feel necessary. It felt a bit like, "Oh, we need to get this point across. Let's crowbar it in."
Yes. Also, when Carrie said that's Big's secretary and then said that's what she prefers to be called.
Yeah.
What? So just in case anybody wrote in and said, "I don't think you should be calling people secretaries." What? I didn't get that at all. Some of the writing felt really peculiar. You're at your husband's funeral. Would you say that's Big's secretary? That's what she prefers to be called.
It jumped out as an odd moment.
Very strange. I thought Willie Garson was great as Stanford.
Oh,
so sad.
And actually, I thought he hasn't changed a jot.
No.
But I think him and his partner looked really good.
They looked fantastic, yeah. If they were having work, they were having good work. And unbelievable that Willie Garson was so ill when he was filming, because he was so funny and light on screen. In general, though, it was very bleak, don't you think? I mean, I know there are going to be 10 episodes, but I feel like Big's death basically sets this up for it to be a catharsis, Carrie grieving. I did read an interview with the creator, Michael Patrick King, and it was basically discussing the need for Big to be out of the picture so that they could return to this idea of the primary relationship that you have in your life being with yourself. And I suppose look at the friendships, because it has often felt a bit weird to me, and certainly with Samantha gone, that Sex and the City is all about female friendship and all about finding yourself, but then they all do get married and have kids and settle down, apart from Samantha. And then with her gone, there was no one who isn't in a heteronormative relationship. I mean, okay, Carrie and Big chose not to have children, but there wasn't a lot there for anyone with a different lifestyle to relate to. So I get it, but I just thought, after 2020 and after 2021, I did not need a show about grieving and death. I did not need Big to die on the floor. Right?
I mean, I think people were distraught about it. Absolutely livid. It felt really dramatic. There was a shock factor to it. It was like a sucker punch. And I agree. Also, it's really close to Christmas. Come on. It's about being merry and putting some glitter on it all. And I wanted this to be cocktails and great clothes and hilariously cheesy but kind of fabulous monologues. Yeah, I didn't need that death. Also, does that mean that then, I know Carrie's sort of the central character and it's less of an ensemble than maybe what we would like it to be. But does this mean now that the whole 10 episodes is just going to be sort of Carrie processing the loss of the love of her life and then getting over it and like, la 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 la? Is there going to be space for the development of the other stories? But is this going to dominate?
I think this is going to dominate. The films were already bad, so I didn't expect it to go back to the glory days, but I was hopeful. And the films did focus on Carrie recovering from something. So, okay, it wasn't Big's death, but it was Big leaving her at the altar. And so we got to see her unable to get out of bed in Mexico, unable to draw the curtains. We've seen grieving Carrie. Then we got to see her change her hair and get a new assistant. And it kind of feels like we're just replicating that plot of the first film, or that they will to an extent, because it's her finding her way and rebuilding her life by herself. I was already feeling that without Samantha, it was going to lack joy and it was going to lack sexiness and it was going to lack a lot of that freedom, because the others tend to be a bit more uptight or a bit more close-minded. And then obviously with the really sad news that Willie Garson had died, that you'd be lacking Sanford, who's such a joy. So to give the characters who are left, who are already not the jolliest characters, to give them such bleak storylines to deal with is just, I think it's mean to us.
Let's see where it goes. I mean, I have a fear that Paul Miranda is going to turn out to be a raging alcoholic. I feel like they're really seeding that seed.
Oh, yeah. Why is she rude to everyone, by the way? Walks in, he's like, went over to 11. She's, oh, wait.
She's just desperate for that whiskey.
We're not serving yet. Oh, I brought the wine. Okay.
But who knows? We'll just have to see how it goes. But I know, I share your fear. I think a lot of it hangs in the next episode.
Yeah, well, the next episode, there was a little brief synopsis and it said something about unexpected Big's ex-wife. So Natasha's coming back.
Catfight.
Is it going to be that she's named in the will or something?
No.
If it is, I can't.
It's not about that dynamic.
She's not going to have a secret child with him, but why do we need to get into Big's ex-wife? That is not what Sex and the City is about.
No.
Unless they're all just fabulous at a pool party and checking each other out.
Yeah.
Hissing at each other like cats.
I mean, the good thing is, as already mentioned, I didn't fancy Mr. Big. So this does leave the door open for a sexy man to come in that I might fancy.
We zoomed in quite a lot, did you notice, on the face of the podcast producer who was behind that glass wall?
Oh, yeah.
We zoomed in on his face laughing multiple times, looking handsome and laughing. And we didn't introduce him So it might just be that he's good looking, but I wondered if Carrie might shag him.
That could be something. Well, and also there's the podcast host, and actually they're quite good as a character. Quite snappy and funny, stand up. That could bring some light relief.
Yeah, and apparently is supposed to have good chemistry with Miranda, although I don't know if anyone told that to Miranda because the chemistry was not visible on screen, if you ask me.
Oh my God, but could it be that Miranda comes out?
Well, that would be wonderful.
I'd have time for that.
I think that's what everyone's hoping for.
Fingers bloody crossed.
Well, a lot to unpack. A lot.
A lot to unpack. Fantastic. Was there anything else you've seen that you want to talk about?
There is a series called On Location by the New York Times. It's articles, but it's people's homes that they have renovated. I love looking into other people's houses, people who do get around to taking pictures of the framers, people who do get around to having cushions made. People not like me, but I like to look at them anyway. They're great. They're American. There's an amazing mini house in Marfa in the desert, and there wasn't space for a bedroom in it. So instead of adding to the house, they just built a little bedroom house adjacent.
Oh,
I know. A little square next to the bigger square. And there's also an LA rental that an interior designer has rented and then just completely transformed. Amazing. Is there anything you've been loving?
I saw a headline that made me chuckle and click on it immediately because it really spoke to me. It's On the Cut. Why are we so awful to our spouses? Ha! We're so awful because they go out at the weekend and potentially get COVID, which means I have to cancel my birthday plans. That's why. Joking.
She's not joking. There's a vein in her neck.
But basically, talks about why is it with lightness and fluffiness and sparkle to people we don't even know, but as soon as you get in the house and you close the door, you just turn into a mega cow to your nearest and dearest, which is what I do all the time. This piece is by Liz Krieger, and she writes, if you know me or see me around the neighbourhood, you may find me chatty, smiley and fun with most people. But that woman is not the same one my husband hangs out with the rest of the time. She can often be found huffily doing the dishes, sometimes stomping around muttering about stray socks, or maybe curled on the couch, emanating unsubscribe vibes, and just generally being grouchy, not a lot of sparkle. Hi, that's me. And I think it's a lot of us, and I was thinking about, as we sort of go into Christmas, hopefully a lot of us will be going home to our parents. I also do that with them. I have probably 48 hours where I'm brilliant and patient and find everything they do just lovely. And then I revert back to my teen years and I'm just a bit of a cowbag.
I look forward to it for so long. And then as soon as I get there, I find fault and I pick at things and I am short-tempered and crotchety and feel that everyone is evading my space. I don't think it helps that I live alone, although I potentially think that I do the same thing. And as soon as I close my front door, I turn into a cow, but I live alone. So I'm just a cow to myself and just have big cow energy as I walk around my house alone and
cow to yourself.
I'm cross with myself that I haven't put a wash on or just fuming, but fuming alone. So yes, I see this, but I 100% do that with my parents. So this is something to be aware of as we go into the Christmas period.
It's something to flag. But look, it's completely normal for us to do it because apparently, as this piece points out, science backs this up. There was a review in a journal called Current Directions in Psychological Science, and it's from 2014. And it found that people who are closest to us are the most common target of everyday aggression. It's a scientific thing. So, you know,
it's the opposite of Miranda with strangers.
Exactly. But as the piece points out, and fair enough, you kind of can't be a dick to people out and about. And you go through the day holding it together. You know, lots pisses me off during the day that people that I don't really know that much do, or people that I know, but if I exploded at them, they probably would never speak to me again. So you internalise it, you hold it all in, and then you get home and you unload. Because you know that if you snap at someone really close to you that you love, you can say sorry. And they'll forgive you. And
what's Ben going to do?
Well, leave me. I'd like to see you try.
He's isolating. He can't.
Exactly. Also, who'd pick up his dirty socks by the side of the bed? Huh? Who'd feed him? Who'd wash his clothes? Yeah.
Have you eaten any of his advent calendar?
Yeah, I did. I had some last night.
Good.
When we discussed probably having to cancel the surprise dinner that he had to tell me about. because we potentially now can't go because our babysitter's got COVID. And he told me about that. And I said, fine, I'm eating your advent calendar chocolate for the day. So fucking take that.
Because you don't have one.
Exactly.
That's fair.
Anyway, that piece is on the cart and it just absolutely made me laugh. Don't feel bad about being a dick to people you love. We'll do it. And I'm not saying it's healthy, but I'm saying we'll do it. And let's just accept that and move on, huh?
Great.
In cheery news, I just want to call out a couple of absolutely banging Christmas films that I have watched recently. And by banging, I mean kind of terrible, but brilliant.
Go.
A Castle for Christmas.
I've watched it and I loved it.
I was going to say, this is you written all over it. Don't even. It's Brooke Shields. She is a best-selling romance novelist. Much like the creators of Sex and the City, she kills off the romantic lead in her final book. Her fans turn on her. She has to flee America, so she goes to a Scottish castle that her father grew up in. It's called Dundunbar. And she falls in with a local community of knitters and tries to buy the castle. And it is fantastic. The American version of Great Britain is amazing at the best of times, but I feel like when America does Scotland, God, I mean, everything's tartan. Head to the cab that picked her up from the airport is tartan. The pub was like the ideal country pub. It's really good. And it's Brooke Shields. Who can't act?
Rude.
She cannot act, but she's Brooke Shields. So you watch it anyway and love it. I also want to highlight Single All The Way.
Another banger. Obviously, I've seen it.
Also might be a Netflix or an Amazon Prime. I can't remember.
It's Netflix.
Netters. Jennifer Coolidge. Fantastic. She plays this slightly mad aunt that is a failed Broadway star who has to put on the kids' community nativity. That's actually the subplot, but it's more interesting than the main plot.
I mean, the love story that is the main plot line is lovely, and it's Mark from Ugly Betty.
Heartwarming.
He's wonderful. But whose idea was it to not put Jennifer Coolidge on the film poster? Obviously, I watched it anyway because I'll watch any Christmas film with a pulse. But come on, don't bury the lead, guys.
Phenomenal. My final one, Bad Mums at Christmas.
I don't want to see that.
Which actually, it's remarkable how bad it is considering the cast. Wait for it. Susan Sarandon, Christine Baranski, Kristen Bell, Catherine Han, Mila Kunis, Justin Hartley. For those of you that have watched This Is Us, heartthrob. He plays the sexy Santa. If you're feeling a bit horny, just watch it.
Cool.
Peter Gallagher, the dad from The OC. Stellar cast. Awful film, but also brilliantly awful and worth a watch. I have to say, the mums, so it's Susan Sarandon, Christine Baranski and Cheryl Hines, the mums of the Bad Mums, and they are actually brilliant. So yeah, there you go. They're my terrible, brilliant Christmas film recommendations to watch.
I definitely endorse the first two. I will not be watching Bad Mums 2. I have not watched Bad Mums 1. I saw the trailer and I thought it looked terrible. So even though you say I've got terrible TV taste, glass houses. Although actually, I've just looked up when you started having this conversation. I'm just going to read this to someone. So I forgot to text Frankie to say that I'd gotten home. I think we'd just been at the pub together and I walked her past her house and then walked onto my house, which is only 10 minutes away. And Frankie texted to say, are you home? And I put, oh, yes, sorry. Watching Britain's Best Woodworker. Proof that I'm writing this, not an abductor. And Frankie wrote, haha, fabulous. Unless your abductor is also a stalker, then they would know you've got chronic TV taste.
Yeah, there you go.
Enjoyable. Maybe that anecdote didn't actually land. I thought it was funny.
No, I think it's hilarious.
It didn't sound funny. I didn't deliver it well.
Anyway, the moral of that story is, if you want to impersonate Charlie, you need to make sure you note that she's got horrendous TV taste.
Excuse me, Bad Mums 2. Also, Frankie said that The Nativity was a good film.
It's brilliant.
It's awful. I was babysitting last week at Frankie's house. I was on her Netflix. It recommended it to me. Watch this again, because you're obsessed with it.
Yeah.
I watched it, had to fast forward through most of it. It was awful.
The kids doing the audition.
No. Awful.
Well,
it's like watching Britain's Got Talent. Jesus Christ.
Right, let's wrap this up before we fall out. We're not really going to. That's our last podcast before Christmas.
Have a Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas, everyone. Thank you all so much for listening. Have such a nice time whatever it is that you end up doing. Feel free to rate, review and subscribe. Give the gift of a good recommendation this year to your friends, family and loved ones by recommending this podcast. Oh, they'll love you for it. What else can you do?
You can subscribe to the newsletter that we never write at thewheelwoman.co.uk. We will try harder imminently. And you can follow us on social media at Frankie Gradden, at Charlie Gowans, and collectively at thewingman_. And you can also celebrate other holidays with us. Neither of us is actually religious. We just really like Christmas. But, you know, come to us also for some Hanukkah joy.
Diwali love.
Or some non-religious listening.
St. Patrick's Day.
We could. We could start all of the holidays, couldn't we? Have a nice break, everyone.
Have a nice holiday.
Hope you get a booster if you want one. I'm thrilled with mine. Even though I had to deliver some paracetamol so that I didn't have to pay the minimum order fee, I added some Ben & Jerry's chocolate fudge brownie and they accidentally sent me vegan Ben & Jerry's chocolate fudge brownie. And I'm nearly wet.
I'm so sorry. That's like the time I delivered a pizza and accidentally ordered a gluten-free base.
Well,
I think I did cry.
Merry Christmas, one and all, including vegans and celiacs.
Fa la 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 la. Ta-ra.
Bye.